Welcome to the Soap video series from Oak Tree Community Church in South Bend, Indiana. We're starting a brand new book survey, because that's what we do here, is we survey these books.
Right.
And we spend, you know, back and forth from the Old Testament to the New Testament. We are going into the Old Testament to one of the books that has a lot of Sunday school stories.
It does.
If you grew up in Sunday school, I did, like you did, you hear some of these stories as children, and some of these actually become children's favorites.
They do, and when you read them later, you kind of wonder why, right? Right, or what the significance of...
Probably because they were being narrated and acted out maybe by your teacher, and we've got some stories about some kids in here and everything, so where are we going?
We are in 1 Samuel.
1 Samuel.
And anytime you hear that first, you know that there's probably a second.
Probably going to be a second.
Too. Right. Yeah, so this book covers the time... It starts out before the nation of Israel has kings,
right?
And it covers the first couple kings in there. So we have 1 Samuel and 2 Samuel, and then we also have 1 King and 2 King, and then 1 and 2 Chronicles too that we're talking about. So why would we have 6 books on the same thing?
Yeah. So basically, the book of 1 Samuel starts during the time of the judges. Okay, Samuel is born during the time of the judges. Actually, we were looking at this before Samson. He and Samson may have been born around similar times, and he grew up during Samson's rule or judgeship. Right. And then Samuel is going to become basically the last judge of Israel before we get into the kings, right?
Right.
So originally, the two books of Samuel and the two books of Kings in the Hebrew Bible are combined into just two books.
Yeah,
so it's the Book of Samuel and the Book of Kings. Hmm. When the Old Testament was translated into Greek, called the Septuagint, about 200 years before Jesus, those books were broken apart, and they were called 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 4th Books of the Kingdoms. Because you got Israel in the north, you got Judah in the south, so Israel's kingdom. So you have 4 Books of the Kingdoms. When Jerome translated the Bible into Latin, about 300 years after Jesus, he renamed them 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, and 4th Kings.
Okay.
So now we've got four books of Kings. And then at some point, you really don't have a ton of kings in the first, you've got 2 kings, really, you know, Saul and David in these first
books. But there's
two
a lot
books.
Going on with those.
Yeah, so they were renamed after the main character of the first third of 1 Samuel, and probably even that Samuel wrote most of 1 Samuel, or a good chunk of 1 Samuel anyway. Yeah. So now we've got 1 and 2 Samuel. And 3rd and 4th Kings became 1st and 2nd Kings. The two books of Chronicles overview most of these other four. So it's from a different perspective.
Yeah. So one thing I didn't realize, 1st and 2nd Samuel and then 1st and 2nd Kings, I mean, they actually fit right next to each other.
It's a chronology. It's the Chronicles that come back and summarize most of the four books.
Which is cool. Yeah. Okay, so we're going to be in 1 Samuel. It covers about 95 years, and it covers from Samuel's birth to Saul's death. So different guy, 1 King's death, and then the beginning of David's reign.
Yep.
And we need to remember a couple things, because we always think Jerusalem is the capital, but not yet.
Nope, not yet.
Right. Yeah. And also the temple hasn't been built yet. So two major things here. So David will find actually moves the capital from where it was to Jerusalem. And he also starts the plan for the temple and maybe gets part of it, the foundation.
Yeah, the temple doesn't even actually get built until the middle of 1 Kings.
Okay.
The first half of 1 Kings. Okay. David will move the capital to Jerusalem. So we're working still in the tabernacle or the tent that Moses had designed Moses had it built back in Exodus. It's traveled through the desert for 40 years, and now it's been in Canaan or the land of Israel now for 300 years. Okay. By the time we get to this point.
Right.
There's still a priesthood. We've had 300 years of judges, and
we also need to remember they're still a little shaky with following God.
Oh, they're still very shaky. Shaky is putting it nicely. they do not like following God.
And really, the major overall theme here is the people want a king, and God's like, fine, you want a king, we'll give you a king. but that's not God's plan.
Right, yeah. The plan has, well, and the judges were never God's plan either, right? The plan always was, once we get into the land, Joshua is going to lead you into the land. When Joshua dies, there is no successor for Joshua. There is no president, there is no head. God leads them through the priests. That was the whole plan. That was the setup. Well, the priests go rogue,
right?
And now there's these judges and all this other stuff, and prophets. There are prophets, and Samuel is both effectively he is functioning as a judge and a prophet and a priest.
Right.
a lot of this.
Yeah, we see that.
Yeah.
With everything.
Yep.
Okay, so chapter one, we actually start out with Samuel's mother.
Mm-hmm.
Her name's Hannah, and at this point, she's married to Elkanah, mm-hmm. so Samuel's father, and they're living in Ephraim. Mm-hmm. Did I pronounce that right?
Yep.
Ephraim?
So
which is north. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just from the tribe of Ephraim, right? And you were going to say north of
Jerusalem.
Jerusalem, yeah. Right. That is, so that's basically one of the largest tribes, and that's where today we would call a lot of that, not today. Today we call it the West Bank, but Samaria is in that tribe of Ephraim.
Okay.
And that's where the tabernacle has found a home. Sort of central, more central really than Jerusalem is, sort of central in Israel so the people could come to the tabernacle.
Yeah, all around and to a central location.
Yep.
Okay, so the dad actually has a second wife, and Hannah has no children at this point. And the second wife has many sons and daughters, and it's a point of contention.
Yeah.
So Hannah and it seems the second wife pushes Hannah's buttons too,
well,
as you can expect.
Yeah, and so the reason that, and this was allowed under the Mosaic law, for a man could have multiple wives, it wasn't a big deal. God allowed it. As long as, and the rule was, you're not allowed to marry somebody in spite, to spite your first wife.
Yeah.
And you have to, if you're going to marry another wife, that's fine, but you have to treat your first wife with all the love and respect that she mm-hmm. deserves as your wife. You don't get to, spite her. You don't get to, turn her, whatever.
Yeah. Well, I actually see that happen.
Well, but it wasn't him.
Yeah.
And that was the thing, is the law was, you can't do this to your wife. But the problem was that Hannah had no children. And under Jewish and Hebrew genealogy, this guy, Elkanah, was going to get written out of the genealogy books if he had no heir.
Right.
So he married another woman so that he could have an heir. Well, she was able to have children, and for some reason, Hannah was not.
Right.
And so that's really what's going on here.
So I don't want to kill any points here, but turns out Hannah will have children.
Yeah.
So since she was the first wife, would her children then set the precedence? Or would both sets of
no, kids? It's going to be both. Okay. Yeah, it's going to be both. Elkanah would have had his option. He could have, like Abraham did with Isaac, he did not, even though Ishmael was the firstborn, he did not, Isaac was the son, so he bequeathed, he willed everything over to Isaac. But Abraham had other sons after Isaac as well, and so he gave them all little stipends and then said, go away, because Isaac gets all this stuff.
Right.
So Elkanah could have done the same thing with any of his children from either marriage. It didn't really matter.
Okay. So you're talking about the temple and where it's at, and or the tabernacle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I always mess that up.
Yeah.
And one of the things is each year people would go there.
Yeah.
Right. And they would perform sacrifices there.
They had to for Passover, for Pentecost, and for the Feast of Tabernacles. They had to.
Yeah. So the whole family unit goes there, and they worship and they have the sacrifice, and they actually get a meat portion back, right, as part of the sacrifice.
Yep.
And he would give to his second wife and all their kids their portion, and he'd give Hannah a double portion.
She was his first wife. Yep. The reason he married her, I'm sure, because he loved her.
Yep.
And the fact that he knew that Peninnah was, like you said, pushing her buttons. She was the one who was torturing Hannah, not him.
Yeah, but I'm sure that helped the torture.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt. There's no doubt.
Yeah. So while they were there, the other wife made Hannah cry again, and she goes outside, and she's crying, and she went to the tabernacle, which seemed to be like across the street, maybe it was a little bit farther than that, and she prayed to the Lord of Heaven's Armies, which is kind of an interesting.
Yeah. Some translations are going to say the Lord of Hosts, but that's the thing.
Yeah. And she said, okay, if I am given a male child, I will dedicate it to the Lord.
Which under the law, all the firstborn males were already dedicated to the Lord, but God in the law said, I've redeemed them by taking the entire tribe of Levi for myself. So okay. you can keep your sons, right? They've already been redeemed. Right. What she's saying is, I'm going to bypass that whole thing and I'm going to give him to you anyway as a gift if you would let me have children.
Yeah, so there's a second part in here too. And his hair will never be cut.
Yeah. Probably the Nazirite vow. There's three parts to the Nazirite vow. Don't cut your hair. You cannot eat or drink anything from the grapevine. And you can't touch dead bodies, animals or people for the life of, you know, for the life of the vow. Now, Samson was a life from the womb. Right. He was a Nazirite. He wasn't allowed to do anything. This is probably something similar.
Similar to that. Yeah. Okay. All right. So there's actually a priest there, and a priest's name is Levi. He heard Hannah's prayer. There was definitely a mix-up. They get the mix-up resolved, and he prayed over Hannah, and she felt better.
Yeah.
So they go back to their homeland. She actually gets pregnant, has a son, and after the son is weaned, they come back to where Eli is, and she dedicates the son.
Yeah.
So what's going on?
So weaning was about 3 years, so they would nurse for about 3 years and then wean the child. And so we've got a toddler here who she came back, and let me it's only about 20 miles away. Because Shiloh was in the tribe of
Ephraim. And they're going there every year.
And they lived, you know, Ramah was only about 20 miles from Shiloh, give or take. Okay, so it's not like they're, you know, forever away, right?
Right.
You know, she can come and visit if she wants to or whatever. And they were, like you said, they were there multiple times a year, okay? But yeah, she's like dropped him, like not at the doorstep.
Well, that's kind of the way it sounds.
But she had already told, but she actually says, I don't know if you remember me from 3 years ago, but, you know, 4 years because of gestation, right? 4 years ago, but I was the one who was praying. You thought I was drunk. You prayed over me. I did have a son here. I told you I'm going to dedicate him to the Lord. I'm doing it. And like, he was okay with it, I guess.
It's one of those things, you're reading it. Okay, times change.
Somebody drops a 3-4-year-old off at your doorstep. But yeah, you know.
Yeah, okay. So that's chapter one. chapter two, it starts out with, I think it's 10 verses where Hannah gives a really heartfelt prayer.
Yeah.
Now, if I have just dedicated my only son, that there was trouble conceiving, you know, it took a while, my prayer would be about the son.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, take care of him, you know, help him to grow big and strong, you know, make him do good things.
Yep.
And it would also be, hey, God, I held up my end of the prayer.
Yeah.
You know, what's in it for me?
Yeah.
But that's not what this is. Nope. This is a prayer from somebody who is praying to God an awful lot.
Yeah.
And she seems to have her head really in the right place. And so so as you're reading that in chapter 2, the first 10 verses, take some time with it. I think I read it 2 or 3 times.
What's interesting is verse 11, following the prayer, says, then Elkanah went back home to Ramah. So it's not just her doing this, right? It's not just her doing this. Possibly she stayed for a while. And again, we're only talking 20 miles, right? It's not like there was, you know, this, you know, huge long distance. So it very well could be that she stayed to help raise him there at the tabernacle.
Right.
You know, so Eli's not, you know, got this toddler running around, you know, type
thing. Yeah, well, that's the deal.
That's what it looks like. So, and so Elkanah went home, you know, with his family. And so that's my guess. My guess.
All right. So now Samuel is serving God under Eli, and who's a priest, and we'll also find out in a little bit that he's the high priest of the tabernacle. And Eli has 2 sons himself.
Mm-hmm.
And these sons are old enough that they were priests. And we also find out that they're very wicked.
Yeah, they're not good priests.
Yeah. And there's a whole list of their wickedness in there. Just a couple things. They took more food than was allotted. They treated the Lord's offering as theirs. So basically stole food from God.
Yeah.
And a little thing that they may or may not have had sex with some of the female temple workers. And actually, it says they did have sex with them. And what I really think is maybe the worst part of it is Eli didn't do anything about this.
Yeah, which was really...
Yes, right. It's kind of odd. So it says Hannah would make linen robes for Samuel, and they would, you know, see him on a yearly basis at least.
Yeah, so
Eli would bless them.
So as he grew up, eventually she did, even if she stayed for a while, eventually she did move back home,
and
he became part of the temple or the right. tabernacle service.
Right.
Right. And then she would see him, right. you know, at least annually, if not more yep. often.
And it also said she had 3 more sons and 2 daughters.
Which so, is very cool.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, very cool. I like that. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, sorry.
Yep,
go ahead. You never hear about Peninnah again.
Yeah.
She's gone. Not that she's gone, but she's out of the story.
Right.
Right. She caused trouble. God blessed Hannah. And you never hear about her again.
Yeah, good point. A great verse that I found in chapter 2, verse 21, the second part of it. Samuel grew up before the Lord.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool.
Yep.
So then we skip some time, and now Eli's old, and he actually confronts his sons on what they've done, which I think is an awesome and a great thing. And then I kind of worry, is it too little, too late?
Way too little yeah. and way too late, yeah.
Right. Yep. Right. But he specifically warns them about God's wrath. The sons ignore the father, and God decides to get rid of the sons.
Yeah, yeah. It actually says the Lord decided to kill them.
Right. Yeah, I wrote that. I thought I was like...
you know, I mean, how bad do you have to be for God to say...
And we're done.
Yeah, I've let you go on way too long, right?
Yeah, so a man of God came to Eli and told him what the Lord had said.
Can I back up? Real quickly, one thing here. In verse 26, I found this interesting. However, the boy Samuel, this is in contrast to Eli's sons, the boy Samuel was growing up and finding favor both with the Lord and with people. It reminds me of something that Luke wrote about Jesus. In Luke chapter 2, he grew in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and people. I wonder if maybe this was in Luke's mind
when he
was writing his, and Jesus was growing up that way, almost identical, not identical, but really, really similar to how Samuel's described here.
Oh, that's interesting. I wonder if that's why I picked up on at least the last part of that.
Could be, yeah.
Part of that. Yeah.
Yeah. I just thought that was a neat similarity there.
Yeah. So a man of God comes to Eli, which is really funny, the high priest.
Yeah.
A man of God is coming and basically telling him, here's what's going to happen.
So... we still have judges, because the time of the judges right. has not, depending on exactly this date, you know, there are still some judges, there are still some prophets. It's not like Samuel's this lone guy out there. I mean, he hasn't even really started his work yet. He's still either a young boy or a teenager. So there are still men of God out there. And, I mean, your point is that it wasn't, I mean, Eli should be the man of God.
But,
right. there is somebody else that's out there speaking for God, which is sort of cool.
Right. He says a number of things. You can read them all. Probably the worst is, you have honored your sons more than you have me, which... Man.
That's
100%.
Yeah.
But then there were some bad things that were going to happen, right? Like, there's going to be no old men in your family. Eli's eyesight was starting to fail. He's like, if there is anybody old... they're not going to be able to see.
Yep.
Many will die by the sword.
Yep.
Your 2 sons are going to die on the same day.
Yep.
You know.
So God had already made a promise to the family of Levi that you will have somebody. You know, the Levites will. It was a covenant actually with the Levite. You will always serve before me. But Eli's family was not going to be able to participate in that in that covenant anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. And then God says, after this, then I will raise up a faithful priest.
Yeah.
And your house will beg for money from him.
Yeah.
So, and that's going to be, we'll see, that's going to be Samuel.
Yeah.
Then chapter 3, I love that there's a little tidbit in here. The Ark of the Covenant shows up.
Yeah.
And it's really funny because it's like, oh, and then they move on to something else, but the Ark does come into play.
Yeah, later. I think that's setting it up for next week's reading, right? Yeah.
Yeah, but this is the Ark of the Covenant, and it's at the same place where Samuel is, which is way cool.
That's the tabernacle. That is where he is serving.
Right. Now, you wouldn't think, especially little kids, wouldn't have a lot of access to it, but at least be able to see it.
No, because it's going to be in the most holy place, right? It's behind the temple. Only the high priest goes in once a year on Day of Atonement to do that. And I'm not sure. It says the boy Samuel. I'm not sure where he's at. You know,
it does seem like some time has passed.
Here. Yeah, yeah. I think there's probably, you know, maybe he's a young teenager by this point.
Yeah.
You know, he's serving. He's the one who's responsible for opening the doors in the morning. So he's got some responsibility. He's, you know, he knows what he's doing now. It's not like he's 5 years old and mom is still checking on him type of thing.
Right. So then we hit one of those stories that you were talking about that always show up in Sunday school.
Yep.
So Eli's old. His sight is failing. He's lying down. Samuel is lying down. I don't know, I always picture it early in the morning.
Yeah, probably.
Not time to get up.
Yeah.
And they're in separate rooms. And 3 times God calls to Samuel.
And we don't know it's God at first.
Not yet. Yeah. Right. Right. And Samuel runs in the room to Eli. Here I am. And and
stop waking me up.
Yeah, what are you doing? Eli's yelling at him. I didn't call you. And Eli finally figures that out. Okay, next time, wait, say, here I am.
Well, that's the same.
Your servant is listening.
So nobody else is in the building, right? Oh, but God is in the building.
Yeah.
And what we're going to find out at the end of chapter three is that God hasn't been talking, right? At the beginning of chapter three, receiving a message from the Lord was rare in those days.
Yep. Right?
God hasn't been talking to people.
Right.
And so Eli, I mean, there's some spiritual insight here where he picks up on, if you're hearing a voice, somebody's calling you, that's pretty significant. If it's not me, God's the only other person in the building.
Yep.
So I think it's cool that Eli was still sensitive enough that he was able to pick up on that.
Yeah, and but yet he has, it seems like he has a number of chances to fix it, and he chooses not to.
Yeah, right.
So God speaks to Samuel, and then Eli made Samuel, you know, spill the beans on what was going to happen.
Well, and it was really bad stuff of what God was going to do to Eli's family. Yeah. And Samuel, I mean...
Yeah,
you don't want to say all that,
right? But Eli already knew it,
yeah.
Right? That it was going to happen. But hearing it again had to hurt. Yeah. But the big thing is God is going to do something big in Israel, and like you said, you know, God hadn't made His presence known very often, so this is a big deal. Something big is going to be happening.
Yep.
And then He's going to carry out everything that He said against Eli and his household, and Eli comes back with the Lord will do what He pleases.
Yep.
You know, kind of shut down the conversation there.
I mean, what is he supposed to say? Oh, no. You know, I mean, you know, God has already told him once now.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to think I would act different. And maybe I wouldn't. I'd like to think that I would. And then the last point is all of Israel realizes that Samuel is a prophet of the Lord.
Yeah.
Right? God had talked. And I think it goes back to Eli saying, you know, we heard, he heard from the Lord. We need to listen to this guy.
Yeah, verse 19 is really cool. Samuel continued to grow and the Lord was with him. None of his prophecies fell to the ground unfulfilled. I just like that wordplay there because you think of words going out there. And if, under the Mosaic law, if a prophet makes a declaration and it does not come true, he's a false prophet and he needs to be executed. They had to have a 100% perfect fulfillment rate. So we don't know what God was speaking through Samuel.
Right.
But whatever it was, every time, he was proving to be a prophet of God, even as a young man, while some of these other judges were still judging in their areas.
Right.
And then once they stopped, now Samuel is the guy. He's been proven to be the guy.
Right.
And we're going to find out for 20 years, he's been proven to be the guy.
Yeah.
And
we've got a little gap when next week starts.
Yep.
Yeah. But that's the end, right? Good introduction to this book. First three chapters, bringing the backstory to it, you know, and how we get to this part. Next week is going to be kind of cool. There's some wars that happen. They lose something significant.
Well, things speed up starting with next week. You know, the next couple of chapters, things really start speeding up.
Right.
And from a timeline perspective, I mean, these first three chapters could have taken, you know, 20 years.
Right.
Right. Things are going to start, you know, really picking up here faster.
Yeah.
So hopefully that was interesting, enjoyable, you know, pointed out a few things that maybe you had forgotten, maybe you wouldn't catch. As always, if you have questions, comments, encouragements, whatever, send those in. We love to hear those. And if they are questions, we can answer those for you. Next week, we'll pick up here with chapter 4. Until then, hope you have a great entire time reading this. Make sure you subscribe and share this with those who you think could benefit from this as well. See you next time.
Bye, everybody.